Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the thrice weekly Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show today. This story was first published on December 13th of 2010, under the headline, America's First Highway Rest Area Had Marble Walls. The nation's first publicly owned rest area perches on the brow of a bluff just outside of Corbett, Oregon, overlooking the most spectacular section of the Columbia River Gorge. It's called the Crown Point Vista House, and it's the jumping-off point for America's oldest scenic highway, the Columbia River Highway. The Vista House is rather more than just a rest area. For starters, the bathrooms are finished in marble and mahogany. It was designed by a German architect and built out of cut sandstone at a cost in today's dollars of roughly $2 million. But then, the Columbia River Highway is more than just a road. Today, most people know this road as an old and scenic byway peppered with picturesque old bridges and tunnels and bejeweled with waterfalls and panoramic views, but often clotted with motorhomes. It's hard to think of this, but in 1915, when construction started on this road, Western Oregon might as well have been across an ocean from the rest of the nation for half a year. Steamboats plied the Columbia River and could take passengers to the Dalles, but the passage wasn't cheap, and the river, untamed as yet by hydroelectric dams, was far from the broad, placid waterway we think of today. Likewise, railroads ran up the gorge, but these weren't cheap either, nor did they stop so passengers could look at waterfalls and picnic on river beaches along the way. Your other option for getting out east was to hitch up a wagon and team of oxen, not an automobile, they didn't have the traction, and set out on the infamous Barlow Trail. Or head south to Springfield and over Mackenzie Pass. Just not in the winter or early spring when the passes were covered in yards-thick layers of snow. Enter philanthropist Samuel Hill. Hill had dreamed of a scenic route through the gorge for some time, and by about 1913 the stars were beginning to line up. First of all, the wealthy swells in Portland had all bought themselves automobiles and were finding their usefulness frustratingly limited by the crude, muddy roads of the day. Many of these oofy motorists were willing, like Hill, to put their money and social influence behind a highway project that would give them a place to take their Buicks and Maxwells for Sunday drives and leisurely picnics, and also to show off the unique qualities of what was still a pretty rough-hewn frontier city to upper-crust visitors from back east. Increasingly, thanks to Henry Ford's cheap iron, the less wealthy were joining them on those roads as well, and popular pressure to do something about the problem was building. For help with his plan, Hill hired, at his own expense, legendary road builder Samuel Lancaster as an engineer. Soon, following the election of some road-friendly county commissioners, the project got a green light. Lancaster scouted a route that threaded past waterfalls and scenic spots like the string in a pearl necklace. His highway would be specially oriented to frame picturesque vistas here and there, and would be carried over gullies and across sheer cliff faces on picturesque concrete bridges and causeways. Everywhere possible, drop-offs would be protected by a rustic, stony guardrail to stop cars from tumbling over the edge, a guardrail made by the same Italian masons who built the foundations for the Vista House. Portland swells bought up property along the way. Waterfalls, stony outcroppings, picturesque viewpoints to serve as parks. Of course, they bought up some for themselves, too. Portland's elite helped in other ways as well. C. Lester Horn tells of one recalcitrant landowner, whom he is careful not to identify by name, who'd vowed to fight condemnation proceedings to keep the highway from coming through his land. The landowner was a Portland businessman, and one of his major customers was the Benson Hotel, then the nicest in Portland. Simon Benson, when he heard, called him on the telephone personally. Could he please send a messenger over to pick up an urgent letter? The landowner could, of course, but when the messenger returned, the letter he brought was a cancellation of all business from the Benson Hotel. So he in turn got on the phone to Benson. Could Benson please send a bellhop over to pick up an urgent reply? Benson could, of course, and when the bellhop returned, what he brought was a signed and notarized easement allowing the highway to pass through the property. Benson also famously paid for the footbridge that crosses near the bottom of Multnomah Falls. While chatting with Lancaster, the engineer, about how nice it would be to have a bridge there, Benson asked casually what it would cost to do so. When Lancaster came up with a figure, Benson came up with a checkbook, and there on the spot, paid for it. In the end, Lancaster's road came to be far more successful than he and Hill ever dreamed. In fact, it quickly became a victim of that success as it grew choked with heavy commercial traffic that caused noticeable deterioration. By then, the aesthetic qualities that had motivated Portland aristocrats to finance the road so generously were mostly gone from American road building. People just wanted to get somewhere fast, not dawdle along an unnecessarily long detour and gawk at the same waterfall they had passed every day for 5 years on the way to work. So starting in the late 1930s, newer and more bland roadways, mostly running along the river near water level, started replacing segments of the road. Finally, with the construction of Interstate 84 in the early 1960s, the highway was fully freed to return to the use that the Portland plutocrats had originally envisioned, as the string in a scenic pearl necklace. And yes, except for occasional closures for remodeling and maintenance, the Crown Point Vista House rest area has been in service the entire time. Well, that's the end of today's story, key sources of which included works by Samuel Lancaster, Lester Horn, and VistaHouse.com. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do. Visuals that go with today's show can be found at offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Got an idea for a show I should do or just want to say hi? Drop me a line at fj@offbeatoregon.com or ping me on Twitter at @offbeatoregon or send a message through the Facebook page at facebook.com/oregon.1859. Also, do let me know if you're ever going to be in Corvallis with time for a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead and an inclination to talk about Oregon history. Fresh episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come your way around 6 a.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. So if you're looking forward to the next one, well, you haven't got long to wait. Until then, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.